Hello and thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight. I'm Nick Blumberg. Brandis Friedman has the evening off. Here's what we're looking at.
My values are clear. We don't compromise them. We are negotiating details within those values.
The mayor responds as city council members push back on his proposed property tax hike. Our Spotlight Politics team has the latest on budget negotiations. And state lawmakers are returning to Springfield. We're one-on-one with Illinois' House Speaker on Democratic priorities ahead of a second Trump presidency. And now to some of today's top stories. Mayor Brandon Johnson admits his $300 million property tax hike is likely DOA. At a news conference this afternoon, the mayor acknowledged his proposed increase, aimed at helping plug next year's massive budget deficit, did not appear to have the votes to clear city council.
I've said from the very beginning, this is a proposal. I'm a collaborative mayor. For the first time in the history of Chicago, you're actually seeing that type of collaborative approach. And we will continue to engage with city council.
Alder people are set to meet Thursday to vote down that tax hike as they consider other ways to plug the nearly billion-dollar budget deficit projected for next year. Attorney General Kwame Raoul is launching a statewide conviction integrity unit in an effort to combat wrongful convictions. Raoul says the new unit will review convictions for forcible felonies involving actual or threatened bodily harm for which someone is currently behind bars in cases that aren't up for appeal or post-conviction review and where there's newly discovered credible evidence.
My office works with every part of the Illinois criminal justice system to ensure victims' rights are preserved, the innocent are protected, and the guilty are convicted and punished. However, wrongful convictions destroy lives. Wrongful convictions diminish faith in our criminal justice system. They put victims and public safety at risk by allowing the true perpetrators to escape unpunished.
Raoul says the new unit is the result of a five-year development process. Applications for review are already available. Illinois voters were clear. They want property tax relief. So says former Governor Pat Quinn, who backed a non-binding referendum on last week's ballot, which called for a 3% surcharge on income over $1 million. That money would be earmarked to help lower taxes for homeowners.
That the people of our state want real action on something that's one of the most hard-hitting areas of raising the cost of living. For a lot of folks who own a home, it's their number one and only investment, major investment in their whole life, but the burden, property tax burden, has increased over and over again.
Quinn says that according to State Department of Revenue calculations, the tax would generate $4.5 billion in annual revenue. He's calling for a constitutional amendment on the ballot in 2026. The Chicago Bears could be eyeing land ripe for redevelopment for a proposed new stadium. Crane's Chicago Business first reported the team is considering the former Michael Reese Hospital campus south of McCormick Place. It's the latest reversal after first planning a move to Arlington Heights before pitching a new lakefront stadium that received plenty of pushback. The team reportedly hopes developing the long-vacant 50-acre Reese campus could help garner support and financial assistance from lawmakers. In other Bears news, the team fired offensive coordinator Shane Waldron after just 9 games. Coach Matt Eberflus thanked Waldron in a statement today, but said the struggling offense needs new leadership. The Bears fell 19-3 on Sunday to the Patriots and face the rival Green Bay Packers this Sunday. Up next, Illinois House Speaker Chris Welch on priorities in Springfield in light of Donald Trump's reelection. That's right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Jim and Kay Mabee family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
State lawmakers are returning to Springfield this week. The two-week veto session was already on the books for legislators, but now it comes on the heels of Donald Trump's re-election. And Democratic leaders who kept their veto-proof majorities in both the House and Senate are discussing what, if any, actions the state may take to, quote, shore up protections ahead of a second Trump presidency. Joining us to talk more about this is Speaker of the Illinois House, Emmanuel Chris Welch. Speaker Welch, welcome back to Chicago Tonight.
Hey, Nick, thank you for having me.
So last Tuesday was a good night for Democrats in Illinois. Nationally, not necessarily so much. What's the mood like in your caucus right now?
Well, I mean, it's bittersweet. I mean, we're Democrats. We're obviously pleased by the fact that we were able to protect the great 78, that all of our colleagues are returning for another 2 years, and we're able to continue to work. But we were disappointed. You know, we supported Kamala Harris for president. And clearly, the country thought otherwise and sent a very powerful message to Democrats nationwide.
As we mentioned, we've heard this talk about so-called Trump-proofing some of Illinois' protections. What specific items are on your list?
Well, you know, Nick, fortunately for us in Illinois, we have done a really good job of thinking forward. We have said every time we stand up on the floor and fight for certain bills that we couldn't predict what was going to happen in 2024, and we needed to make sure that we protected the values of Illinoisans. And so we've done that when it comes to workers' rights and women's rights and LGBTQ plus rights and the climate. We've done a lot of work on some very important things. And what we do know is what Donald Trump has said he will do. We know he's going to do it. And we also know he's unpredictable and he'll probably do other things. And so we have to be prepared to use the state's rights that we have to continue to protect the values of Illinoisans. And those conversations are happening right now. We're still trying to identify those things. You know, we know that, you know, this week we're here, next week we're here. We're not going to get everything done in a two-week period of time. We're going to be back in January. We're going to be back for a regular session. We have some time. We just want to make sure we get an alignment and get it right.
You know, one of the items you mentioned, Illinois has plenty of legal protections for reproductive rights in place. Should we see something like a federal abortion ban or at least more severe, you know, restrictions on abortion rights at the federal level? What, if anything, could a state do to fight a measure like that?
Well, we believe we've already done that with the Reproductive Health Act. And we strengthened the Reproductive Health Act under my term as speakership. We initially passed it in 2019, and then we strengthened it when I became speaker. Illinois has some of the strongest protections in the country. I mean, we really are a beacon, not just in the Midwest, but across the country when it comes to women's reproductive health. And we believe those protections would be in place even if Trump and the Congress tried to pass a national abortion ban based on states' rights. But certainly, you know, we're prepared to fight and defend that. And what we saw also last Tuesday was 7 out of 10 states that had abortion rights on the agenda passed, including in Republican states like Montana and Missouri. And so Republicans would be tone deaf if they pass a national abortion ban. Clearly, when abortion is on the ballot, people support women's reproductive health. All 78 of our great 78 ran on women's reproductive health as one of the main issues. And our caucus, every single incumbent, won re-election, and that issue is a very important issue. And right now, as we sit here talking, Nick, three Republicans who represent pretty safe Republican districts traditionally are still counting votes that those districts can come our way because we talked about women's reproductive health in those districts.
Would you support an amendment to the state constitution enshrining abortion access?
Well, that's certainly one of the things that we've talked about even before Donald Trump was elected last Tuesday. I think that that has to be a serious part of any conversation that we have going forward, you know, especially when we see how successful it was on the ballot last Tuesday.
Last week, a federal judge ruled that Illinois' what's often referred to as its assault weapons ban is unconstitutional. What's your reaction to that decision?
Well, we've had other challenges to our bill, our law, The Protect Illinois Communities Act, the assault weapons ban is something that I'm really proud that we accomplished here in Illinois. And it's been under attack by the right wing since we passed it. The Federal Circuit Court, the Seventh Circuit, has rejected challenges to it before. We're confident that our appeal will be successful before them again. And the Supreme Court has rejected twice now certiorari on that particular law. So we have to let the process play out. We believe we got it right, and we're going to continue to defend it.
You know, and this idea of banning semi-automatic weapons, it's something, you know, that's come up in Illinois and in other states and has faced other challenges. If it makes it all the way to the Supreme Court and not, you know, on sort of procedural questions, but if it makes it to the Supreme Court kind of on the meat of whether that sort of law is constitutional, do you think a ban on semi-automatics would survive given the current makeup of the justices?
Well, I certainly believe that we have to be concerned because of the current makeup of the court. We have to be concerned because the president-elect has told us his position on the issues. But we believe that our lawyers advised us properly, that we got it right, and that it would meet constitutional muster. It's met it before at the Seventh Circuit. We believe it would meet it again at the Seventh Circuit, and we're confident about our legal position. If they overturn our ban on assault weapons, I believe it would be purely partisan nature.
And that it wouldn't be following, you know, Supreme Court precedent, that it wouldn't be following the standards that justices should be held to? Is that what you think there?
That's correct.
I want to turn to the issue of the budget. The governor's budget office recently released its five-year projection for the state, and it predicts a shortfall of more than $3 billion for the coming fiscal year, which starts July 1st. How are you preparing to tackle a budget gap quite so large?
Well, I'm concluding my fourth year as speaker, my second term. And every year that I've been speaker, we've had grim forecasts. And every year as speaker, we've passed balanced budgets that's led to surpluses and credit upgrades. I think we've had 9 credit upgrades the last that I counted. I'm very confident when the 104th General Assembly gets sworn in January 8th of 2025. We're all going to roll up our sleeves and continue to go line by line through the budget. And we're going to get it right again. We're going to make sure we pass a balanced budget that Illinoisans can be proud of, that protects the values of Illinoisans, that shows that we're a state that works and a state that cares. We can do both.
You mentioned the number of budget processes you've been through. Earlier today, we heard from Senate Minority Leader John Curran, some other GOP lawmakers, who essentially said, you know, that your chamber and the governor have not worked collaboratively on previous budgets. Here's a bit of what Leader Curran had to say.
Our budget team does a fantastic job. And if it was a Senate-only budget, we would have had a bipartisan budget. So the Senate Democrats, Senate Republicans worked in a very collaborative manner. It was a matter of getting the House and the governor to buy into a bipartisan approach.
How about that, Mr. Speaker? Have these earlier budgets been sort of a fait accompli?
Well, you know, I've never had a sit down one-on-one with the Senate Minority Leader. My door is open to anyone. I'm Speaker of the House, not Speaker of the Democrats. His office is across the hall. If he wants to come and sit and talk with me and tell me what we've been missing, I'd love to hear it. I think highly of him. I respect him, but I totally disagree with what he said. We've passed balanced budgets since I've been speaker that take care of the entire state, Democratic districts, Republican districts. They've been balanced. They've upgraded our credit ratings. There have been budgets that we can all be proud of.
We heard earlier in the show about a subject lawmakers have been skeptical about, the new Bear Stadium, specifically the notion of public funding for that stadium. Do you think the former Michael Reese site in Bronzeville might draw more support from lawmakers in Springfield?
Well, you know, here in Springfield, where we're right now talking about a five-year Gombe financial report that projects a $3.1 billion deficit, and we got to talk about pensions, and we got to talk about transit, talk about things that everyday people are concerned about. I don't think sports stadiums rank high on the priority list. I've said that before, and I'll say that again. I mean, we got to talk about the kitchen table issues that are affecting people, the economic concerns that we heard voters express concern about at the ballot box last week. And I don't think talking about funding stadiums accomplishes that.
We've got about 20 seconds left. Voters in Chicago just chose the first members of the city's newly elected hybrid school board, but it came after Mayor Johnson's appointed board resigned en masse and was replaced. Are you concerned this quickly chosen interim board might take significant action before any of the elected board members are sworn in?
Well, Nick, you know, I don't live in the city of Chicago, and I'm from an elected school board. I believe in an elected school board. The people have spoken, and I'm going to let the people of the city of Chicago work through that process. But, you know, I got to stay busy down here, focused on what we're going to get done for the entire state as well.
Well, you may not be a Chicagoan, but we no shade to the suburbs, and we appreciate you joining us on Chicago Tonight, Speaker Chris Welch. Thank you very much.
Nick, thank you.
And up next, our Spotlight Politics team on a stalling plan to hike property taxes in Chicago. Heather Sharone and Amanda Vinicky join us right after this. The latest on the fate of Mayor Brandon Johnson's proposed property tax hike. Meanwhile, plans by Democratic politicians in Springfield to, quote, Trump-proof the state, and defense attorneys cross-examine a key witness in the corruption trial of former Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan. Here with all that and more are my Spotlight Politics compatriots, Amanda Vinicky and Heather Sharone. Good to see you both. So as we mentioned earlier in the show, Mayor Johnson acknowledging that proposed $300 million hike likely not going to pass city council. Heather, you were at the mayor's press conference earlier today. What's next for the budget process?
Well, on Thursday, the city council will hold a special meeting to sort of put an exclamation point on their rejection of that $300 million property tax hike. But as I've said on this show before, budgets are zero-sum games. If you do not raise taxes by $300 million to fill a nearly $982 million deficit, you have to do one of two things. You have to either borrow that money. That's not possible for the city because it already has a massive debt load. It means you have to cut, or you've got to raise other taxes. And it seems that, like Mayor Johnson, since he will not accept a budget that includes layoffs. So that means that they're going to have to cobble together $300 million worth of smaller tax hikes, fee hikes, and perhaps some new charges.
And hope that residents won't notice quite as much as that, I don't know, blinking figure on your property tax bill.
Correct.
Yeah, rather than just one big ouch, it's a bunch of smaller ouches.
Little next, yes.
Well, you know, I mean, Heather, does the city council's apparent rejection of this proposal undermine Mayor Johnson's authority in city council?
Well, it is a startling rebuke, and it is sort of a nature of budget negotiations that we've never seen before, because under Mayors Richard M. Daley and Mayors Emanuel, it was a rubber stamp. You had 49-1 budget votes. Now, that started to change under Mayor Lori Lightfoot, who said that she didn't like to horse trade and sort of get into the nitty-gritty, but her budgets also passed relatively easily. Johnson sort of cast that today as a good thing, that this robust debate is an indication that democracy is alive and well in Chicago, and that these discussions, which had taken place behind closed doors under previous mayors, are now coming out in public and giving people a chance to sort of, you know, engage in it. However, it's not clear why the mayor would propose a property tax hike of this size if he didn't think it had some base level of support on the city council. And I just said there are no longer 50-0 budget votes anymore. I think that will be wrong if this vote does happen on Thursday. Nobody wants to be on record having voted to raise property taxes.
Well, and especially, again, after he pledged not to during the
Correct.
Campaign. I think that that is really key here, and something that we can't ignore, that older persons aren't ignoring. You can't go back from that. And so it makes it even more mystifying because he's taking that political hit without getting the benefit of the funding from it, especially after, what, last year? foregoing a inflationary raise in the property tax hike that I think people really wouldn't have noticed, and it wouldn't have been treading back on a campaign promise because it was built in anyway. You didn't have to do that.
Well, he promised to undo those inflationary tax hikes too, and Lori Lightfoot, who proposed it, couldn't even get that through her last year in office. It's another indication that property taxes remain the third rail of Chicago and Illinois politics. Touch at your own risk.
Do not go on to tracks. Wait for a CTA employee to get your phone back. Okay, well, speaking of other bad budget news, Amanda, we heard about this $3 billion deficit Illinois is expected to be facing. Republicans are blaming Democrats for that. What ideas do Republicans have to close the gap?
Well, they say that, for starters, they don't have a full grasp of where the state budget is at because they haven't been part of negotiations in a fulsome capacity. And so they want to get a handle on that first, but really they're making two takeaways from the election. They say that people are upset about spending. They're worried about their own wallets, kitchen table issues, and therefore there should be no tax increases. And then they're also pointing to frustration with spending on new arrivals, and they believe that Illinois needs to reverse some of the programs that have paid for example, some tuition programs, or really a lot of focus on health insurance that is going toward non-citizens. So those are the areas that they are really pointing to. Let's be clear, though, that would certainly not be nothing. I mean, those are programs that do cost more than a penny. That said, not enough to knock out a $3 billion budget deficit that is projected.
Speaker Welch was with us earlier. He's been among this sort of chorus of Democrats talking about, quote unquote, Trump-proofing the state. How much power do state lawmakers have to push back against the federal government if it sets its mind to it?
I mean, I think it remains a big question because there's so much ground that could be covered there. If, for example, there is a national ban on abortion, even though there's a lot of projecting that the Trump administration won't go that route. But nonetheless, if there were to, I mean, what do you do about that? Illinois has its own separate set of protections. That said, there are certainly areas in state law that are being scoured over right now that, for example, rely on federal statute. And so part of it is really just sort of dotting your I's, crossing your T's, making sure it's not there, looking at protecting, for example, the prevailing wage and labor laws, looking at making sure that there are protections for data privacy, whether it be, for example, like a period tracker or tracking somebody on their cell phone if they come to Illinois, where there are protections, for example, for gender-affirming care that are outlawed in other states. Mm.
We also heard earlier from Mayor Johnson about his reaction to Kamala Harris's resounding defeat last week. Here's what the mayor had to say.
We will not bend or break. Our values will remain strong and firm. We will face likely hurdles in our work over the next 4 years, but we will not be stopped, and we certainly will not go back.
Heather, the mayor was asked specifically about President-elect Trump's calls for mass deportations, you know, the prospect of ICE raids in the city. What did the mayor have to say?
He said that Chicago will not agree to revoke its sanctuary city status. It will not allow police to work with immigration agents if they come here, as the president-elect has said that they will, and that they are prepared to fight the federal government in court to protect the city's share of federal grants if the Trump administration tries again to yank them for those protections for immigrants.
Amanda, we've got about 30 seconds left. We mentioned that referendum increasing the income tax on millionaires. How about another one downstate from some voters who might want to secede? How did that ballot question fare?
Well, that fared actually passed resoundingly, and this was in, I believe, seven states. So really a handful of states.
Counties,
not states. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, boy.
But they want to become their own state is the whole point. Like you said, they want to succeed, and this is something that we have seen, not just in this election. There's really been a pattern of particularly downstate counties taking this approach, and I think while it ain't going to happen, it is not something, therefore, that we should concentrate a lot on. It is definitely a show of the polarization and a regional divide and frustration, frankly, that a lot of these Republican majority counties are feeling toward the city of Chicago and Cook County.
Yeah, not anything that's likely to happen, but certainly not something that lawmakers should be ignoring. I'm sure we will have much more about that issue in weeks to come. But Amanda Vinicky, Heather Sharon, that's it for now.
Thanks for keeping me honest.
Happy to. And that's our show for this Tuesday night. In case you couldn't tell, our newsroom loves exploring the backstory on the complicated issues that matter most to you. So sign up for our email newsletter, The Daily Chicagoan. You'll get a daily dose of what's happening and why. Visit WTTW.com/newsletter and you'll get it in your inbox tomorrow morning. And stay connected with our reporters and what they're working on by following us on Instagram at WTTW Chicago. And join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 10. Takeaways from a study on reparations by residents on Chicago's South Side. And an upcoming production at the Lyric Opera of Chicago follows a family's grief and healing. Now for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Nick Blumberg. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a personal injury law firm committed to giving back to the community through law and philanthropy.